Welcome to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Coming to you from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria, I'm your host, Kevin S. Fox. Stay tuned tonight as our expedition takes me back to my own homeland to discuss Austria and Heimat photography with scholar Elizabeth Cronin at the New York Public Library on Fifth Avenue, Manhattan. We explore how a specific genre of photographs framed an informed post-empire, post-World War I Austrian identity, and how these ideas run deep into Austrian self-identification today. Heimat is one of those words or concepts, really, from the German language that doesn't translate so easily into English. It is a place, one towards which we have a strong sense or feeling of belonging, very deep-rooted. Maybe it's your native region or the whole of your native country, but generally it's connected to the particular traditions and cultural practices, the landscape, the dialect or accent of that place, and the emotional ties one has to it. For such a nebulous concept, it does, however, get captured through photography. And here we dialogue with Dr. Elizabeth Cronin, who has spent years investigating the imaginations produced by Heimat photography in Austria. She received her PhD in art history from the City University of New York and is now assistant curator of photography at the New York Public Library.
This idea, though, of Heimat, what does it refer to?
Really, a sense of home, a sense of homeland. It's sort of a feeling of things that are cozy and familiar. But what's important about it is it's this broad term. So as much as it's home, it can also be applied to many things and larger areas. So you can say, you know, this is my home and this is my Heimat and you're literally referring to the house. Or you can say, this is my Heimat and you can be referring to the town. Or you can say, this is my Heimat and you're also referring to the country. So it's a really interesting, because of the broad scope of it and because it's based on reality, it's based on something that you know, but because it can be broader than of just a physical place, it's really an idea and it's a feeling. So that's what makes it an interesting concept.
So it's at once sort of tangible, physical, and then intangible,
yes.
And sort of conceptual.
Yeah.
A little bit more nebulous,
yeah.
Harder to pin down, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that in English, home is sort of similar, but there's a tradition behind using this word and a real culture of Heimat that exists in Germany and in Austria that is different from in the U.S.
In the U.S., just to kind of go along with that, in the U.S., do we have regional kind of Heimat?
Maybe. I think that it's more difficult in the U.S. because of the history of the United States, because we have all, you know, we're a country built on immigration and, I mean, not everyone immigrated, but, you know, largely, and I think that, you know, people stay in the same place, but there's also a lot more movement, I think. It's an interesting idea.
We're less rooted, perhaps.
Yeah.
We're a much more mobile country.
We're less rooted. It's a bigger country. There is a sense of regionalism, and there's certainly a sense of regional pride, but it's something that's hard to explain, but it's different. It's different here than it is over there.
Now, I know that you're from Texas.
I know.
Is that probably the closest thing?
It is the closest thing. I laugh.
As being a non-Texan here.
No, it is.
That's the first place I would think of.
I mean, I do. I I obviously, people are proud to be from Texas, and there's a lot of pride and a lot of, you know, and it's similar in ways. I think it's abstract concepts like these that are feeling based and emotionally laden. It's hard to compare, you know, okay, this country says this is Heimat, but this is really Heimat. I mean, it's open to debate, but, there's certainly similarities. It's not something that's unfamiliar. It's just that I feel like we don't have a word that describes it quite like that. You know?
So this is one of those cases where the German language the German, has some specific
words. And that's why in the,
words,
in the critical literature, in the scholarly literature, people always just use the word Heimat. You know, they talk about, you know, this is what it means, or this, you could translate it as home, you could translate it as homeland, but then they always just keep using Heimat.
Even in English-speaking articles and books. Yeah. All right. Because it's one of those concepts that's just...
Because it is. It's more than just home.
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check us out online at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to our episode. So how do we communicate Heimat? Of course, through cultural practices, passing them down from generation to generation. But I'm going to suggest that cultural practices are not a thing being preserved and passed down, but are active processes, are always, albeit sometimes only very subtly, in flux, in contestation, and always adapting to the context in which they are taking place. Heimat is no different, and photography, as in any placemaking practice, is a key driver of Heimat definition in the portrayal of an identity, of a place and a people. In 2015, Elizabeth Cronin published Heimat Photography in Austria, a politicized vision of peasants and skiers, and it explores this idea directly.
And in the Austrian case, I guess, you know, what were some of these images that, you know, like I mentioned, or what were some of the images, you know, you're studying 1930s
right.
Austria, where
right.
there's some political, and maybe a little bit of the political context might help. But what were some of these photographs sort of depicting?
What makes photography and Heimat so interesting in the 1930s is because these ideas are sort of emerging at the same time. I mean, photography was invented a long time ago in the 19th century, but in the newspapers, magazines, there were photographs printed in, you know, in the 20s, but it wasn't so common. In the 30s is when the late 20s, 30s is when really the illustrated magazines have a lot of photographs in them. And so that's what is interesting about this time period in photography. And then, you know, there's photography exhibitions and books, photo books that are produced with mostly photographs, little text, if at all, are all produced during this time period that Austria is also trying to define itself. So it's using photography in interesting ways.
After World War I, it's no longer the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Right.
Austria sort of is trying to,
right,
in a lot of ways, redefine itself. It wanted to itself with Germany, but it wasn't allowed to by the Allied powers.
Yeah, and the country is struggling. It struggles in the 20s. There's, you know, there's a democratic government that fails, and then it, you know, there's a lot of politics going on. And ultimately, even the government in the 1930s, I mean, it fails too, but you know, both governments are interesting in their own ways, but, you know, the government in the 30s really tries to use photography and photography of the Heimat to its advantage to create an image for Austria, and literally an image, as well as figuratively.
So it's trying to sort of deal with this idea of the modern state at the same time, trying to kind of recapture or even create what being Austrian means.
Right.
And through what kinds of images?
There's a lot of landscapes and of the Alps, not so much. Heimat photography is usually more rural focused and less of the city. And that's not, there are Heimat photographs of the city, and you could say that, but it's not as cozy. It's not as, people don't, I don't know, they don't get that warm, cozy feeling usually when they see the city. And and if Heimat photographs in Austria at this time, if they are of Vienna, then it's of the cultural monuments. Heimat is also about, you know, so it's defining home, and it's the specific aspects of home that are linked with history, with tradition.
Is it the symbolic representations?
Yeah. And so at this time, a lot of the Heimat photographs are of landscapes, but alpine landscapes, because that's what makes Austria unique. So it's shrunk from its huge size as an empire, and it's left as a mostly mountainous country. And the mountains are impressive. I mean, no one can deny that. And so this is something to celebrate rather than, you know, basically, and I know that it's not really the case, but basically you have the mountains and you have Vienna. And the mountains are, you know, beautiful, and they're pristine and they're untouched. And so they're not spoiled by whatever politics is going on in Vienna. And that's an important part of why the photographs, the Heimat photographs, aren't of Vienna. Because when you see Vienna, you think, oh, you know, Red Vienna, or this political person, or that tragedy, or this artist, you know. So there's more. But when you see the Alps and the meadows and the peasants, know, you breathe the fresh air.
Mountains alone, or people climbing mountains?
Both.
Yeah.
So there is, you, when the Heimat photography movement started, and it started in Germany, also to an extent, lesser extent in Austria, it was mostly about cultural heritage. Let's photograph things that we want to preserve. Let's photograph landmarks. Let's photograph our landscape, because it's important to us and it defines who we are, our landscape.
It's cataloging in some ways. Like,
yeah, so it starts off as like this preservation thing.
Yeah.
But then it becomes more than that. And as Austria is developing its image in the 30s, it's the same time that, you know, there's all these different things happening at once and influencing each other. It's, people are exploring the mountains. People are climbing the mountains. And, of course, the first mountain climbing and mountain explorers, that was much earlier in Switzerland, and the British were pioneering climbers and skiers.
Right.
But it's happening within Austria too, and really, you know, this is, it's a really exciting time. And so what they do, and I don't think, not all of it is premeditated, but what happens is the Heimat photographs are not just of landscapes and peasants and folk costumes, which they are certainly, but they also become skiers and mountain climbers. And that really, there's this push, because, and this is where the government steps in, the corporate state government of, you know, that had very much fascist leanings of Austria in the 30s, the dictatorship basically wanted to be modern, wanted to say, okay, we're a country just like the rest of Europe, so we're modern, we're in the 20th century. But they also had an agenda of, we're very traditional, we're very conservative, we're very Catholic. Mm-hmm. So the image was of both. It's like, we are the, you know, it's kind of like they picked the best of both worlds. Like, we can be modern if we want to. We can climb this mountain and we can put on our cute little ski outfit, or we still have the, you know, the peasant, the rooted class that's always been here and is farming and wearing and upholding our traditional Catholic values. So yeah, there's this
keeping the mountains there.
Yeah, it's interesting because it kind of doesn't go together, but it did for them. And it was, I think they wanted to be two different things. They wanted to be, you can't just be this modern country of climbers and skiers, because you want to emphasize your history, and this is your tied to the land, and this is the land that you've always had. And a lot of Heimat, and the feeling of Heimat, is there's a past, there's tradition, you know, it's home, it feels nice, and it feels like home because it's always been home. Right. So you don't move somewhere and have this great feeling of, I mean, it takes a while for you to feel at home. Right. So they needed that. And mountain climbing and skiing was all new. And so that showed, okay, this is Austria. We're advancing as a nation because we can do all these things. And we're going to invite all these tourists to come in and enjoy our mountains. But we will also keep the traditions. And so it's an interesting.
Were some of the photographs, if an outsider seeing them, would they feel like this idea of mountain climbing and skiing was a tradition already? Although the Austrians are sort of,
maybe
it sounds like they're promoting
tradition.
It. They're promoting it as the future past.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
The future, we'll look back now from the 21st century and say, well, this is the hearth of skiing. This is where skiing started, right?
And you it worked to an extent because that's what we do. And
we think,
you know,
of the Alps as the hearth of winter sports.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the Austrians are always good at downhill skiing in the Olympics.
And
you know,
are.
Like they all. So yeah. This is, you know, they you know, seized on this idea, and it was, you know, they wanted to bring. There were a lot of things, you know, part of the reason for emphasizing alpine sports and alpine relaxation, and it's not just winter sports, it's also like go here in the summer and get away,
hiking and
and this happens at the same time as, you know, a lot of these areas are, you know, these are not areas of preservation, these are national parks, these are, you know, I mean, maybe I don't know exactly when they did the established
the
various parks, but, like, you know, there was, from the alpine clubs, there was certainly maps, you know, were being made. These are where the huts are. These are where you hike to. This is
around the same time.
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely a lot of exploration and a lot of, you know, encouraging people to go outside.
So this is sort of a savvy tourist board driven, or before tourist boards maybe existed, but
no,
this is
tourism existed, and yes,
it's place marketing, it's saying,
and part of the reason is Austria, of course, it all goes hand in hand. You can't say, like, oh, they had this idea and then this came next,
right.
You know, like, oh, let's develop mountain sports and then we'll do this,
right.
But it sort of all develops at the same time and everyone's taking advantage of what's going on. And it's a money issue too, right? Austria needs money.
It's kind of
it's the 1930s.
Depression worldwide.
And it's a smaller country and it can't exploit all of these other areas in its empire anymore, so they've got to do something, right?
Right.
And tourism is a big,
it's like a natural resource.
A natural resource,
yeah.
And they have the natural beauty, so they're going to invite people to come in and see it. And one of the big developments of the time period is the Großglocknerstraße,
right.
You know, and there were other, there were other alpine roads too, and that was like the achievement of
engineering feat
of the government at the time, is like, you know, look, we can be modern, we can construct these things to, you know, it's also this old idea of like taming the landscape, right?
Of course. Yeah, this road.
Human power over the natural world. And look how, you know, look at what, you know, the mountains are sublime and terrifying, but we can build this street through them.
Right.
So that they aren't anymore, basically. If you don't want them to be.
And only maybe 50 years earlier, people weren't climbing mountains, right?
Yeah.
Was it the outsiders that sort of pushed the envelope a little bit and said, well, yeah, you can climb these mountains? It was much more of a local or regional sort of...
Well, but the locals and even then,
superstition,
like,
is it? I mean,
as far as I know, it wasn't something that they necessarily did. They did because they had to move the cows to a different pasture. But, you know, they didn't...
It wasn't sport.
Not really. Yeah. The sport comes in the really...
Early 20th century.
I mean, I would say late 19th in Switzerland with the British, I believe. The early 20th century is like the boom, the alpine boom.
Yeah. So we find Austria then broken off from the rest of its empire, looking to define itself and looking to come up with maybe new symbols. And so this alpine culture, which it's had, but maybe the way it's going to show that alpine culture through sport and through perhaps a desire to bring tourists there, this becomes sort of, and all of this happening at the same time that this, the form of the magazine, the photo heavy or photo thick magazine really helps them do that and accomplish that.
Right. And, you know, posters, postcards. All of these things are important.
It's this era, right? This time period that's becomes...
Right. I mean, you could have drawn things before, which, you know, were based on photographs. But there's a weightiness then to the photograph, I think, when
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Geographical Imaginations is an hour-long radio essay program broadcast monthly from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria. This public geography project presents a geographical or spatial way of thinking about our relationships with the worlds we inhabit and co-create. Each episode takes a theme, or perhaps a question, and explores it through an interactive dialogue with different texts and voices. For more information about the show, check out the website at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to our episode. The power of the photograph, or the image more generally, is such that it can produce ways of thinking about people, places, and things. So how does the imagination of Heimat get formed by the photograph?
In the case of Austria, you know, there's sort of different forces at work. You have the lone Austrian citizen thinking, you know, this land, this is my Heimat. But you also have the government and maybe regional governments, not just national, saying, this is your Heimat, and they define what it is. So, and I definitely think that in our current day, in, you know, ideas of what your home is it's always, you know, produced, recycled, you know, governments tell you what you should think. And a lot of that has to do with tourism.
Yeah.
You know, this is how tourism is how the area, whether it's the country or the region, says, this is who we are. This is what's important. This is what the visitor should see. This is the image that we want to project.
The narrative.
So.
The storyline.
But, yeah, this is, you know, it's your self-image.
Right. And what's the way, I guess, here we're talking about photography. So photography is pretty instrumental in that representation and that sort of, you know, formulating or forming this imagination then for whether it's a visitor or someone who is actually living there and maybe doesn't understand their history or doesn't know their history as much as they would like. And so other sort of mechanisms or other, you're mentioning the government, the media, maybe even more so today, is producing a way of thinking about then that Heimat.
I mean, photography in a way goes hand in hand with the idea of Heimat because it's something that is, it depicts something real, right? You can't take a photograph of something imagined. So you have a real landscape that's in the photograph, but yet you can create an atmosphere around that photograph through its context, how you show it, what, where it's seen, you know, what text you have with it.
Right.
And then you're altering, you know, what this picture means, what this photograph means for whoever sees it. So, just like Heimat, you can, it's something physical, it's something real, but you can
frame it.
Imagine it. Yeah. You can frame it. You can you can say this
Propose a certain imagination.
Which makes it quite interesting.
And is that where some of that sort of tension comes between dominant groups over, you know, sort of maybe alternative groups or subcultural groups or dominant cultural groups are wanting to define then the Heimat? They want to define this is our shared past.
Yeah.
And this represents perhaps then, if we think of it as a trajectory, this is the future we want to, or the past we want to keep sacred in some ways in the future we're going to together. Is that
Yes, absolutely.
Did the government, I'm thinking like in the Depression era here in the United States, there was sponsorship of, you know, we're going to pay you, you go out. It's the WPA project.
Yeah, and the FSA.
Go out and photograph and catalog the United States. And, and some of, which has kind of affected our way of thinking about not only that era, but especially for the East Coasters, the rest of the country. Is that, is the government sponsoring the photographers themselves? Are they paying photographers? Or just buying their photos? And as you would today, kind of. In a more of a private commercial deal with people.
There were certainly some government photographers, but it was not like the FSA. And really very different. I mean, there is some kind of connection there, but it really is different. In the US, the FSA, the Farm Security Administration, sent out photographers to show how the government was in, you know, to document what was going on in the U.S. and show how the government was helping them. But while they're iconic images to us now, they're not idealizing in the way that the Heimat images were.
Yeah.
You know, that we don't, when we picture 1930s America photographs, we picture the migrant mother, right? And she's feeding her baby and she has two other children and she looks poor and distressed.
John Steinbeck's
Heimat photographs don't show, if they show peasants, they're wearing their Sunday best. They look perfectly content with their lives. They're not in rags.
This is packaged.
The interesting thing is photographers at this time, and of course I'm lumping them together, you know, but they all, what's interesting is they're all photographing something nice. It's not that many of these people were, it's not that the government said go and photograph this. The government really wasn't that well organized.
Okay.
It's a relatively new government. The right-wing government starts in 1933, and it's gone by 1938. So there's 5 years. And it supports Heimat photographs because it's putting them in its publication. So it's using, you know, the work and it's putting on exhibitions, but it's not sending, you know, they may, I have no idea. Maybe they had some photographers, but it's not, a lot of this is coming from photographers themselves.
Yeah.
And it became very interesting that Heimat photography was talked about in like photography, professional photography journals and amateur, you know, photo publications. They said like, this is how you make a Heimat photograph. And like,
really?
Yeah, yeah.
They said, so there's like a formula.
Yeah. I mean, so but there, the thing is like there's,
you're talking about, this is in the 1930s.
This is
in magazine.
In photo magazine.
There were how to do Heimat.
Yeah. Like the photos. Beautiful, like the Heimat landscape. And then they would show you some examples of nicely constructed landscapes. And like, this is how you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
So, and then in like the Association of Amateur Photographers and other larger organizations, they started to have in their annual exhibitions, they would have different categories. And one of the categories was Heimat photographs. So it came from within, and the government's really just taking advantage of it. So, you know, it's not
organic,
like
we say today.
Yeah,
and then the government sort of, co-opts it a little bit for their own purposes.
Yes.
Yeah.
But what's interesting then is, okay, so photographers are trying to make money, but they're also, and what I sort of scrutinize a little bit in my book is that they also go along with it, right? It's, as far as I can tell, it's not like, okay, my photograph's being used for this and I don't like them, so I'm not going to let them use my photograph. You know, they're using their images.
Yeah.
You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. To find out more about the show, check us out online at www.geographicalimaginations.org. To give some feedback or suggestion for a future episode, go to the comments section on the website, or go to the blog and enter into the conversation.
One of the things we've talked about in the show before is the circulation of images of a place.
Mm-hmm.
And Salzburg has actually been quite known for that, because they have this panorama that traveled around Europe in sort of earlier times. And it was early sort of place marketing, I might say, and kind of shaping, you know, maybe it started this tourism to Salzburg that today is so huge.
Mm-hmm.
But the exhibitions, are they going abroad? Like, are these Heimat photo exhibitions coming to New York by any chance? Or London, maybe?
London,
yeah.
Yeah, so the Vienna.
Of course, Vienna, yeah.
Graz.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Innsbruck, Salzburg. They were shown. In 1936 is when Rudolf Kopetz, who was one of probably the best known photographer of the time, who also took Heimat photographs. There, he had a solo retrospective exhibition of his work in the Museum of Arts and Industry in Vienna, and you know, it was huge. It had, I think, it had 300 photographs on it. This was, and they weren't all Heimat photographs, but there was a huge portion of them that were shown, and it was deemed a great success. And then Austria sends its work to the London exhibition that was, you know, well seen. And then a big part of this was the World's Fair.
So this is kind of World's Fair stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. In 1937, in Paris. So, you know, and it's,
So Austria has its own tent, so to speak, like they
yeah,
do many times.
Yeah, and in London, it was an Austrian national exhibition of industry, art, travel, and sport. And, you know, their advertisement was to visit Austria in London.
Hmm.
So basically, it's encouraging tourism. And at the what's really great is at the Paris World's Fair, they had a pavilion that had this huge photographic panorama of the Alps, and it was a montage, montaged photograph showing the various different streets, including the Grossglocknerstrasse. So you really, there was a glass wall and the pavilion, and it was lit up at night. So from far away, you could see inside the building and you could see the Alps. You know, I mean, it was basically like, come to me.
Right.
It was, you know, it was designed to be impressive.
Huge. Yeah.
Yeah, it was huge.
Meters by meters.
And then, and then in cases and whatever else not, they had, you know, examples of folk art and, you know, and technology and basically what Austria was. So, you know, photography was really an important part of...
Like a medium or a...
That image of the nation, of Austria.
To kind of bring it back to the Heimat, I guess, are they structuring then this national space? In this sense, like the intangible, by using then the tangible. So they're making this connection between person, maybe the landscape, and suggesting through that the nation? Is that those three kind of connected?
Yeah, I mean, because what makes up a country? The geography and the people,
the
right?
The physical geography, right.
Yeah.
And here maybe more so because you have this...
really impressive, unique. And it's what separates the country from other countries, right? You want to define yourself, but you don't want to be like every other country because you want people to know, okay, you want someone to see something like, that is Austria.
Right.
That's not Germany. That's not Switzerland. That's Austria. And I want to get back to the peasants that are photographed.
Yeah.
What is interesting, you know, the sort of photography for tourism, you know, it's not just the landscape and the sport. It's also the peasants because, oh, look, here are the natives, so to speak.
I guess that's the same, right?
I think it's this, and I don't know if it's an inherent, or, you know, people are curious about, I mean, there's a whole discourse on the other, right?
Right.
But these are the other, these are, you know, the people who have always been living in the mountains. And it for the modern tourist, it's kind of interesting, right? Like, let's go see these natives, you know, these are like relics from the past that are still alive. I mean, it sounds kind
of
terrible.
It's a living museum.
It's a living museum, basically. Yeah. It sounds a little terrible to say, but that's what it was.
But that's how they're framing it, right?
That's how they're framing it.
Like, these people will be here no matter what happens with this modernity. These people will still survive throughout because they're...
Yeah, and it's also sort of exoticism, right? It's like, you know, like, go look at the thing that's different. So they really sell it.
Or something.
And, oh, wow, they still, you know, I don't know, do this.
Right.
Or do, you know, use horses for that.
Some farming technique, right, that no one else is doing.
So, but that's seen as something to be proud of, as cultural heritage, as...
So by demonstrating, by showing this connection between the land, the people, the nation, the traditions of the Alps, I mean, is this then proposing a new kind of nationalism or...
It is.
Or the old kind that maybe didn't exist?
Maybe. I think it is a new kind of... I mean, they certainly were trying to get people to be proud of Austria too. And there's surveys that were done, statistics in the 50s and beyond, like, who do you identify yourself as? Are you Austrian? Are you
German?
German. Yeah. Do you see yourself as anything, basically? And if you go from the 50s, 60s, 70s, in the 50s, no, almost no one thought of themselves as Austrian.
Hmm.
Now, everybody, most everybody thinks of themselves as Austrian. Of course, they have a lot of immigrants from other places. But like, but basically, throughout the rest of the 20th century, people became, they slowly became to define themselves, came to define themselves as Austrian. So
what did they answer before? Like, or there was, it was either a yes or no Austrian.
Or they didn't feel like they were anything, you know, or it was, you know, I feel, I guess, Viennese, or I feel, you know, I don't. So there was no sense. Basically, there's also within the literature, there seems to be a consensus that in the 1920s, 30s, Austria, very few people saw themselves as Austrian. They either identified with the Habsburgs and the empire, the monarchy, or they saw themselves...
Kaiser Karl. And,
or they saw themselves as just they're in their own little regional world, but they didn't have a sense of...
The national Heimat.
The national Heimat, or, you know, what it means to be Austrian. And this, what happens in the 30s with Heimat photography, this is a visual definition of this is what we want Austria to be. This is who Austria is.
Does it propose
what Austria is?
Does it propose this is the authentic? I mean, we throw that, that word gets thrown around a little bit here. Like, who's the authentic American? Who's the authentic Austrian? Is this trying to say this is authentic Austria, or is it?
No, I think it's authentic Austria. Yeah. I think, I mean, there's a, at the back of one of the sort of, it's an illustrated section that came with the newspaper, and the back page always said, like, beautiful Austria. So it was always about, you know, every week you get to learn a different part of Austria. Like, here would be Salzburg. This is beautiful Austria. Here's the Danube, you know, this is beautiful Austria. So it, you know, it with photography, I think it, you know, it's showing you that the actual, it's based on, it's trying to base it on reality. Like, this is how we can build this idea, because we're building it off of real things.
That people know
and are familiar with, or want to be familiar with. And there was also a huge, I mean, we're talking about tourism, and I've mentioned, you know, getting people from the outside, but it was really about Austrians discovering Austria too. Like, this is your country. You go see what's in your country.
Right.
This is where you, you know, this is where you are, and these are your neighbors, because they're also Austrian. You know, these are, so there's a lot of,
this is your bio region even, because you're really, you know, that connection to the physical landscape really then, you know, connects. Yeah, it's a deeper connection, I think.
Right, and it was something that was also more or less reasonable at the time, because people, not a lot of people had a lot of money, so to travel within the country wasn't a huge expense. Right? So, you know, if you're encouraged, you know, to do a local sort of thing, it's of course a lot less than going somewhere farther afield.
Right.
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check us out online at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Now let's get back to our episode.
How do these photographs, if we were to look at them now today, how does this inform, again, this geographical imagination, this way of thinking about, we can look at it at different scales, like we're talking about Heimat. It's the home, but it's also the region and the nation.
Right.
You know, how do these photographs inform the way today, contemporary Austrians sort of think about their country?
Yeah. So the Heimat movement, in essence, was successful, right?
Yeah.
This image that 1930s Austria wanted to portray, it stayed. when I traveled to Vienna for the publication of the book, I'm arriving on the plane and I'm flying Austrian Air and they're showing this movie and there's the Danube waltz and then they're showing Alpine Meadows and you know there's
and this there's is 2000 not peasant,
there yes
8 or 2007
this,
or something
this is actually 2015
50 oh this yeah. is last year oh gosh
last year yeah. I mean they're not showing peasants raking hay but they are showing Alpine Austria and that has stuck. And they're showing, you know, swimming in the lakes and skiing down the mountains. So,
recreating in the landscape.
Yeah, the tourist industry has really, it developed. I mean, and Austria stayed within these borders that were established at the, you know, and this has really come to define Austria. And in some ways, it's very much escapist. It's, let's think about the mountains and pretty nature because it's nice to think about that. And this is where the tourists go and this is where we also want to go.
Yeah.
This is our vacation. This is our time to relax and be happy and optimistic. And, you know, it's a positive image. And so today, you know, that is what has stuck from, you know, and I don't know, maybe you can speculate, maybe if history had happened in different ways, maybe, the Heimat, this idea of what is Austria, maybe it would have stayed the same, you know, maybe it didn't.
Well, it sounds like it certainly framed it, though. I mean,
yeah, certainly.
In a moment when the nation needed to do framing.
Right,
you
right.
know, and kind of.
It's definitely a definition that has stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so escaping from just the, you know, the rigors, the rhythms of the city, you know, like we would here and go to the woods and have that sort of escape. But it's also an escape from a troubled history. I mean,
yeah. Once Germany, marches into Austria, the Heimat photography continues. It just is framed by a different context. Many photographers keep taking photos. Same kinds. And then the photographs aren't, this is Austria, this is Greater Germany, this is the Eastern March, or this is the, you know, this is the Eastern part of the empire, and this is all continuous, and this is our German Alpine heritage.
Yeah.
And then after the war, they keep producing the same kinds of photographs. Sometimes they even republish the exact same photographs. And it's, then the context is, this is democratic Austria. This is who we are
so
now.
So they reclaimed some of those photographs that may have been used as sort of Nazi symbols. They reclaimed them.
Yeah, it's all about the context, really.
Yeah, right. So today, like you say, it depends on the context in which it's shown. Today, you could look at this and it skips all of that history. It goes back because this is the ideal or the idyllic person who transcends time in some ways. There's no history here.
Right.
They've existed and will always exist in those mountains.
Right.
And it gets out of the sort of cycles of history in some ways.
Right.
It allows you to sort of step out of that.
Right. Or it paints a idyllic view of history, right?
That it's agrarian, that it's the kind of like Thomas Jefferson always envisioned.
Or this is the hut that they've always hiked to.
Yeah, right. And those are the traditions and are going to be recreated time and again, that generation after generation.
As we continue with this thread of this expedition into better understanding Austrian geographical imaginations, I remind myself of the central questions of our labyrinth of exploration. One perhaps most salient here is how Austria, and sometimes we speak here specifically about Salzburg, how has it been rendered, imagined, framed by itself, for itself, and here, too, by itself for the world to consider? These photographs proposed an identity, a way of thinking about the Heimat, the homeland, the spirit of place, about what was right and good about Austria and Austrianness, about an imagined community with mountain landscapes. as perhaps a notion of their authenticity. I propose that the so-called locals here explore and unpack the intangible of their Heimat. Notice the absences, those things that are included and excluded. How the Heimat creates different collectivities at each and every scale and produces a sense of belonging. And I'll ask, how does Heimat shape the way you think about Austria? But also, how does it shape the way you think about other countries, especially when they think about Heimat differently? Join us each month on the fourth Saturday or listen to us at your convenience as we continue to explore a number of threads this upcoming year, words and concepts in German that have some spatial significance and that don't necessarily translate so well into English. It almost sounds like a Jeopardy category. We'll continue to look at photography and its unquestionable role in forming imaginations of both the far and near, and a continued attention to our case study here in Salzburg, Austria. No doubt our listeners will find parallels to their own homelands, to their own Heimats, as we deconstruct this one. Our explorations could take place anywhere. Wherever you are, there is space. And lastly, to read more about Elisabeth Cronin's insights, as well as those of a host of other scholars and artists thinking about these issues, check out Anti-Modern at the Museum Modern, or on their website at www.museumderne.at. Thanks for listening. Ciao.